And our topic today is about ride sharing. And here in Vancouver, of course, it's been a big controversial topic, a constant conversation. Just today or Monday, as we are recording this, the government has announced some rules to get ride sharing started to get off the ground in BC. But some have asked, why can't we have it? Why can't Uber and Lyft exist in a city like Vancouver? Can Vancouver be a world-class city without it? However, there are others, not only here in Vancouver, but across Canada, that have had some serious concerns about what Uber and Lyft do. They have questioned their ethics and the hiring process. Well, enter the co-op solution, which is EVA. It is a cooperative whose mission is to continually develop new decentralized technologies for urban mobility. In this sense, EVA offers a platform for a liaison between driver and passenger members to promote a sharing economy ecosystem. Being a cooperative, EVA democratizes the redistribution of wealth and promotes a climate of cooperation and collaboration. And our guest today to tell us the story of EVA is Dardan Issoufi. He is the co-president of EVA, and he joins us from, I want to say Granby, according to Skype. Is that true?
No, Montreal.
Montreal. You're from Montreal. Okay. There we go. Yeah. Okay. How is it in Montreal right now?
It's very warm. It's a hot, warm summer. I mean, it feels good because the winter was really harsh, so I'm not complaining.
Oh, good. Well, that's good. We're getting some nice sun here as well. But why don't tell us a little bit about how EVA got started, how the concept of EVA began, and tell it for those who don't know.
First of all, thank you for having me. This is really a great opportunity for me to talk on behalf of the whole cooperative movement we're trying to build right now. So, well, before talking about EVA, I'm going to start about the problem, because sure, to every solution, there's a problem. Mm-hmm. In 2017, we had this huge debate in the province of Quebec, the same you're having right now in British Columbia, on how to regulate ride sharing. Is Uber and Lyft a necessary service for a city? Is it something that if we don't have, it's a must? And in 2017, the government of Quebec decided to increase the regulation regarding Uber. And one of the regulation was to force all Uber partner drivers to have a 35 hours training in order to drive. And to be honest, 35 hours online, by the way, it's not that much. It can be done, and it's never like 35 hours, it's 2 hours. And Uber at that time announced publicly that they were leaving Quebec, as if Quebec couldn't live without Uber. And during that time, it was late at night in September 2017, a comrade of mine, Raphael, from Quebec, he was back then studying at Laval University, I was at McGill University, called me, and we had this discussion about whether Uber was a good or a bad thing. And we came up with this conclusion that the way Uber is doing things, the way it's operating with, increasing the precarity of its driver, like partner drivers, of delocalizing the economy was bad. But the technology itself, in which you can see your cab coming, in which you can trace back your invoices, the drivers you had, and so on, was good. And we decided then to start brainstorming, and this is how we came up with our solution, which maybe it's not perfect, because what's perfect in life, but a solution that integrates local management and global development in one. So if I can introduce EVA, well, EVA is a cooperative ride-sharing application based on blockchain. It's, I will say, in Montreal, because we're only adding Uber, it's the ride-sharing option to ensure a fast, safe, and above all, sustainable and fair mobility. It combines a cooperative governance to pool the resources and a decentralized technology to protect personal use data. The ecosystem therefore combines cooperation and decentralization in a perspective of real sharing economy. Because Uber and Lyft and Airbnb and all these centralized capitalist companies owned by some shareholders in the US aren't sharing economy. They're stealing economy. Our ecosystem consists of an application based on the blockchain, third wave of blockchain, and on a social franchise ecosystem in which each cooperative, which is registered within the ecosystem, is an independent franchise operating with its rider and driver members. So for us, it was a perfect mix to allow for a neutral technical protocol, which is our blockchain-based technology, as a scalable alternative, and a local management with the seven values of the cooperative management.
Okay. For those who don't know what a blockchain is, can you explain that a little bit?
Well, a blockchain is basically a distributed database. It's that simple. It's the way we share the data within a network. In our case, we're using third-wave blockchain technology, which, to confirm every transaction made in the ecosystem, it uses the delegated which requires mining and a lot of electricity and so on. Delegated proof of stake is a confirmation among a closed network with different servers located in different places to confirm a transaction with by resolving some algorithms. It's basically a decentralized database.
Okay. So this may sound like a silly question, but I'm just going to ask it anyway. But in terms of like, we'll dig into this a little bit more a little bit later. But if I sign up to be with Eva, there's no concern about privacy issues. You've dealt with that.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, Eva is a technology which is made available to every franchise, every co-op that decides to use it. Us as the developers of the application, we cannot see any data, any personal data.
Okay.
The good thing about the ecosystem is that all the data are available to everyone, but are anonymous. Anonymous in the sense that we don't know who is the person using it. What we see in the blockchain, because if the city of Montreal or if the city of Victoria wants to have access to our data, they can log in into our blockchain with a Block Explorer, have access to all public data, but all anonymous in the sense that what they see is a series of numbers and letters defining one individual. However, the cooperative has access to these data for security purposes. So let's say there's an accident, if we need to trace back a driver. But the good thing is that there's no central entity owning the data apart the members owning their own data by their co-op.
Okay. That's fair. I was just curious about that because I know that would might be some question that some would have. But for you guys in Montreal getting this established, what was your relationship with the city? Because this is what you explained about Uber has been kind of a common problem with other cities in terms of how they have tried to walk in and kind of demand things. What was your relationship with the city, with Montreal? How did you get that relationship with the civic government and as well get public support?
I will say, it's not easy. It wasn't easy. Well, we first started at the local level, so with the city of Montreal back in 2017. To be honest, the city of Montreal was among the first institution to fund our alternative, to fund the co-op, among the CQCM, which is the cooperative federation in here in Quebec, and among other institutional financial groups. The city of Montreal was and still is highly concerned about its taxi services because I mean, it's true. What's happening right now with the arrival of Uber and Lyft and all these ride-sharing companies is disturbing the ecosystem, and that's a fact. And it's also true to mention that every innovation has, you know, its own part of this. How can I say this in English? Its own part of of problems. However, the city of Montreal and even the government of Quebec, which is responsible for transportation, were very understandable. It took us a couple of months to negotiate with them, because here right now it's still forbidden to do ride sharing, except if you have a pilot project authorized by the transport minister. Uber was the first company to have this ministerial order, because it came in the market without any regulation. You know, they're the first one who brought this concept at large. So Uber got de facto this authorization, and then when we came up to ask for the same authorization, Lyft at the same time asked as well, to get it here in Montreal, because it was starting in Toronto on December 2017. However, the government refused the access to both of us, Lyft and Eva, arguing that Uber was already there. The problem with that was that the government was giving a de facto monopoly to one company over the ride-sharing market. And the requirements to fit within the pilot project were excessively high. They were made for Uber. One example was, we had to give $1.1 million to the government as a deposit to be allowed to operate in the market, which is a lot, for a starting co-op. But at the end, after almost 10 months, we managed, to meet with all the president of the National Assembly, all the members of parliament from all the parties, so that we can get this final authorization before even Lyft got it, to operate here in Montreal. And I will say that, most of the people, groups, media were, I will say, really very enthusiastic with this, with having a new solution to Uber, because the app isn't that complicated. I mean, we made it complicated because we wanted it on blockchain, but if it was a centralized normal application, this is something simple to do. It's a maybe 2-semester project for a computer science department at university or college. So, yeah, I will say that, and it's still hard because there's a lot of tension right now going on with the new laws regarding taxi services and so on. I want to mention, however, that we're working closely with a lot of taxi services. We'll be launching Eva in different parts of Quebec with only taxi services, taxi cabs. So we truly believe that taxi services and ride-sharing aren't mutually exclusive, that both can live within one city and share the market in a fair and sustainable way.
Yeah, that's a good point, because we can't leave out the taxi industry in this. So it's good to hear that you're you're trying to develop that kind of relationship with them. And has it been, for the most part, what has been the challenge with keeping that relationship with the taxi community, and what has been a good thing that has come out of that?
Well, the taxi community isn't one homogeneous community. It's a whole mess, divided into different groups. You have independent taxi drivers who own the license. You have taxi drivers who don't own any license. You have companies who own a bunch of licenses. You have cooperatives, which are really good alternatives to the first one, the companies. And then you have companies having this old technology to dispatch calls, which don't have any license, but they have the clients. So starting from that point, what we really understood very fast was that the taxi services isn't one sole ecosystem. It's an internally divided ecosystem in which there's so many different interests. The independent taxi drivers with one license, they want to be reimbursed based on the cost of acquisition. The big companies with dozens of tax licenses, they want to be compensated with the price of the actual market. Even even if they bought this like 40, 50, 60 years ago, their licenses. So there's a lot of different interests. The companies with the dispatch call system, they don't want to work with us because we're direct competition with them. All independent taxi drivers, they're calling us on a daily basis in the office. We're taking down all their names. Even the co-ops are very enthusiastic to work with us. And there's some small companies in the regions of Quebec that are willing because they don't want to pay 10, 15, or 20% as they have to pay with their like centralized companies. With the taxi drivers, with the taxi services, our app is only taking 5%. And for them, it's even cheaper to their actual, you know, credit card machines or whatever they have in their car.
Right. So how did you guys set your price? How did that come up? Like, I'm always fascinated by how, when it comes to co-op and charging, how you come up with that.
Well, in our system, because what we need to know is the app is generic for every cooperative. Right now, there's a co-op in Quebec. We're working right now to develop one in New Brunswick, one in Ontario, and one in Alberta. There's one registered in New Zealand that will start very soon. Also working for Virginia in the U.S. Every co-op has all the parameters of the app to set. In the case of Quebec, the prices are set by the co-op, based on the regulation, based on what the co-op wants, based on what the co-op estimates, like on their annual budget, and so on.
Okay. And did you work with these co-ops in terms of establishing how you would run this as a co-op? Like, what was, did you have a model, or how did you come up with your regulations?
The first co-op is our model co-op, in which we're building all the tools around the operations.
Okay.
We're learning from them. You know, we just discovered a couple of weeks ago, because we're launched in Montreal since 7 weeks, I will say, or eight, I don't remember. Well, yeah, 7 weeks. You know, we didn't know that fraud was a common thing, you know. We understood that people were, like, you know, willingly good people. But actually, there's a lot of fraud. I will say, like, even, like, 5% of all transactions are fraudulent transactions. So then we upgraded the ecosystem so that we better improve, I will say, the security around credit cards, debit cards, and so on. But every co-op that wants to start, if there's a community in a city that wants to start its own ride-sharing business, what we're doing basically is we're providing the application and all the technologies around the application, all the community management portal, all the application control system in which you can follow up in real time all the drivers, all the rides, and cancel the rides, like, you know, from the control center, all the websites associated and so on, so that people can become, you know, support member online and so on. So we're basically providing the co-ops with all the technical tools in order to start the operations. We're also providing them with our knowledge and some templates of bylaws, some templates of all the internal policies and so on. So we're helping them right now in New Zealand, for example. In New Zealand, if I'm not wrong, the co-op there will take 4% per ride and will give 2% at the charity selected by the driver members.
Okay.
So it depends on every co-op has its own, like, way to do things. So, I mean, our goal is to have fully autonomous, independent co-ops, which can make money out of ride sharing.
Right, right. And how, like, for you and Eva, how did you come up with your price? Like, how did you come up with what you would come up with? Because I noticed, like, as a support member on your website, there was an 85% off, as an example.
Yeah, well, right now the website ecosystem is a mess because we need to update everything.
Oh, okay.
Since 6 months ago, there was only one co-op. Now there's much more. But the co-op in Quebec decided to be a multi-stakeholder co-op with five different types of members. So driver members, which are the producers, rider members, which are the consumers, individual support members, which are like, you know, people who want to support, corporate support members, which are like companies and so on. And the last one, but not least, the worker members, the one working at the customer service and so on. So the prices were set initially when we first registered a co-op based on the social shares we thought that were necessary to, you know, to start the co-op. Because most of co-op regulations require that a member pays social shares. However, we managed as well to integrate the social share among 20 transactions, so that the person using the app for the first time doesn't have to pay, you know, a $10 fee just to use the app. This is a co-op who decides, these details. This is about the bylaws. The co-op as well decides the share it wants to take. Us as EVA Global, we're taking 5% per ride, which includes all, you know, the technological management and so on and updates. And there's also a token to gamify the ecosystem that we will integrate later on. And the co-op can take from 0 to 10% per ride. It's up to the co-op to decide how much they want to take.
Okay. And is there limits in where, how far one will go, or what are kind of the rules around using EVA? Will only go to certain areas, or are you pretty open? Like, in terms of if I want to ride on EVA, is there let's just say as an example, and wouldn't do this, I want to go from Montreal, Quebec City. Is that a realistic expectation in EVA, or is that,
well,
depends on the driver?
Right now, the app, because we also plan to develop intercity ride sharing, you know, real ride sharing. But right now, what we call the ride hailing or e-hailing, the Uber transportation, what we refer as ride sharing, is mostly for within the city. But if someone from Montreal wants to go in Quebec City right now, well, they can, but they will pay much more than a traditional bus or the train, you know, that. So it's a personal choice. People can do that. They can even go in the U.S. There's no, if the person wants to go, you know, in Delaware or in Mexico starting from Montreal, well, they can, but it's going to be way more expensive than a flight ticket, you know.
Right. Of course. One of the reasons I'm asking is one of the challenges here in Vancouver is because we have, of course, a whole bunch of cities in the lower mainland. There's some taxi companies that won't go to certain areas. So I was just curious if that was something that you guys were dealing with there in terms of a co-op.
We can, the co-op can set a limit in which we can pick up people, but there's no limit in which we can drop off people. It's up to the driver. If the driver wants to go, you know, in some northern, in Sudbury, Ontario, from Montreal, well, he has, or she, or this non-binary driver member can simply decide to go from, you know, accept the ride and take it and complete it. But eventually, we will develop intercity ride sharing application with different prices than within the city.
Okay, that's fair. Okay, so that's something that is kind of you're developing as well. I was just curious about that.
Yeah.
In terms of getting drivers, what is the process? I know that there's an application, but what should an EVA driver expect to have in terms of training hours, in terms of your driver's abstract, in terms of rules and expectations? What are you looking for if one wants to be an EVA driver?
Well, it depends on the jurisdiction. If we look to BC with the proposal from the provincial government of British Columbia, a driver will need a commercial driver's license, for example. So this will be a requirement. Here in Quebec, we're requiring a criminal record background check by a police department made every 2 years, a vehicle inspection made by a certified garage every year. We require that the car is no like older than 9 years old, with four doors. We require as well a 35 hours online training regarding diversity policies, regarding security, all the functionalities of the application and so on. We also require, let's remember, all the tax numbers so that we can pay our due taxes and so on. So there's a bunch of like little elements like this, but it's mostly regarding the jurisdiction. There's one thing that we want to apply to every co-op is an online training. Maybe not 35 hours, but at least an online training, as well as the criminal record background check, which is very important to ensure that there's a security check on the driver members. And this is not like, this is not about not allowing someone with a criminal record. This is more about to know what is the record of the driver. Because right now we have some drivers in Montreal who are driving and, they have like some minor, they smoke weed in 92 and still on a criminal record. So, this is not a problem. So we just, accepted them. So it's more of a security reason. So there is these are the two elements we want to implement in every co-op. But then in the case of BC, because we're also interested to eventually develop a co-op in BC, if there's a community was interested in that. So in BC, we will be requiring a commercial driver's license, for example.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Have you had any conversation with any cities here in BC, or have you had a chance to connect with anyone out here? Or?
Yeah, I mean, we've reached out to Van City first in order to like to better understand how the ecosystem was was made and so on. We also reached out to the BCCA, so the British Columbia Cooperative Association, in order to see what are the norms to register a co-op. But right now we're more looking for involved entrepreneurs, community leaders, people who are willing to put almost a full-time to first register a co-op with us and to start this this business up and running in BC. We'd like to be there by summer 2020.
Okay. Well, that's something hopefully that can get done for sure. What are some of the lessons that you've learned along the way? What are some of the things that you were like as developing this, you're like, oh, wow, I did not know this, but now I'm glad that I know this going forward.
Let me think about it. I will say, well, there's a lot. I feel that at the personal level, if I look to myself 8 weeks ago before the launch in Montreal, the official launch, and after, I will say that eight weeks ago, I didn't know nothing about ride sharing. Mm. There's so many particularities about this market, which is very complex, which is very hard, and still today, I feel I know like maybe 5% of all, the whole ecosystem. The first, and I spoke about it earlier, is the whole fraudulent transactions. I didn't know that there were that much of, I would say mean people, stealing credit cards and using them. And this is bad. This is not okay. I will say this is a thing that we've learned on our way, while we're ride sharing in Montreal. The other thing will be, drivers really surprised me in a positive way. A lot of our driver members are also partner drivers with Uber. And during the rush time of Uber, they decide to drive with Eva. They decide to maybe lose some rides because, for sure at the beginning, what we're aiming for is an organic growth. So we don't have the same number of rides as Uber. We're not as well known as Uber and so on. But driver members are doing an excessively great job in, being present all over the island of Montreal and the suburbs. They're taking rides, even if they're like 10, 15, 20 minutes away. They're very enthusiastic. They're giving us a such like positive feedback on the improvements that need to be made on the applications. So I will say this is this has been amazing to work with driver members. They're very talented, experienced. I mean, they're driving with Uber since 2, 3, 4 years for some of them. So we have a real-time feedback on the application in which we're always improving. And finally, I will say that, well, people are very understanding. There are, you know, in Montreal, we have almost 15,000 rider members. A lot of them don't know what is a co-op. A lot of them don't know about, you know, the fact that we're only 8 weeks young. But most of them, I will say like 95% of them, when they have a problem, when they call us, they email us, they message us, they explain, they share their concern in a way that's constructive, in a way that we can take it. You know, we're sorry for it, but then we work on ourselves to improve the operational mechanisms or the application itself. So people are really understanding, like they're early adopters, as we call. They're awesome. So driver members and rider members are the one, like, you know, pushing this whole thing forward. And the people with photoless credit cards are like the, you know, tiny 5% doing some trouble here and there, but you know, it's life.
What is some of the things that they're noticing that you do differently or better than Uber?
Well, I will say is the member services, the customer services. This is the most expensive thing of the co-op, but this is very important for us here, at least in Quebec, is when you call Eva, well, there's someone answering you 7 days a week. When you message Eva on Facebook, on Twitter, on LinkedIn, on Reddit, on name it, you know, Telegram, we're always present. We're answering questions. There is a whole team supporting all the social media. When the driver members have a problem, they call in the office. There's someone answering. We're active. We're based here. So we're not like some call center in India and Morocco. I mean, they're doing a great job too. But when you're lost in the city, if you call in Morocco, they don't know where is the Olympic Stadium or, you know, they don't know that. So, and it's normal. I mean, they're in Morocco. They know their stuff. But here when people have a concern, when they have a problem, it's a human approach to ride sharing. And that's truly valuable because our driver member, for example, driver members aren't simple numbers. They're actually driver members of the co-op. They're the one making this whole ride sharing revolution possible here in Montreal.
Cool. Good. And you talked about that the people don't know that you're a co-op or people don't know what a co-op is. How is that education process going in terms of educating people about how you are different as a co-op and educating people overall on co-ops, which can always be it's a bigger topic of conversation we probably have time for, but I'm curious of how that is going.
Well, that's a whole process because I feel that not a lot of people know what is a co-op. And what's a co-op about? You know, there's pretty much like, you know, Best Western, Home Hardware, the Limited Federated Cooperative, the co-op here, the Desjardins, and so on. There are some very powerful co-ops, but people don't know about them. There was this survey in Quebec that has been made a couple of years ago stating that 70% of all Quebecers, they don't know what's a co-op. You know, they don't know. But 80% of all Quebecers are a member of a co-op. You know, that's a funny part of it. So we're making promotion that we're a co-op in when we communicate with people, in our visual identity, in our branding, you know, Eva Co-op, and so on. But we're not pushing it forward. In a sense, what we want people like to know about us is that we're, well, the best mobility experience you can get, the safest mobility experience you can get. So we don't really mind. I mean, for driver members, they all know because, you know, they're in because of this whole cooperative structure. But for rider members, you know, a lot of them know, but most of them don't. What's important for us is that they have a great experience traveling with us. that they enjoy their ride, that they like the service, and even if they have a problem, that they like the customer service. So we're doing this whole cooperative education, you know, as we go, but this is not like our mission so far. This is not something that the members want. They want, you know, to have the lowest waiting time. They want to have the best prices. They want to have the best driver members in town, and so on.
Right. They want the quality of what you're doing above everything.
Yeah. That's correct.
And how is your social media presence? How are you finding? Are you getting a lot of positive feedback on social media? What has that been like?
Well, there's a problem with social media because Facebook, Google, and all these, you know, centralized companies, they're having a hard time on blockchain-based product because, and to be honest, a lot of blockchain-based products were scams, and a lot of them are still scams. You know, they raised some funds, you know, for basically doing nothing. And I do understand why these social media are banning all blockchain-related groups or commercials. But this thing affects us in a very bad way because we cannot make any promotion on YouTube, we cannot make any promotion on Google, and we cannot make any promotion on LinkedIn and Facebook, which is, you know, very, it's sad in the sense that we don't have a huge presence on social media. We're trying to, but, you know, and nowadays with I will take Facebook because Facebook is the biggest one. It's very hard, you know, to reach people if you don't do any commercials on the Facebook.
Right. Yeah. And so that's a tough challenge. You're still working towards it. Yeah.
But we're having, we're very active. We're answering, like, you know, I think the average time to answer a message on Facebook is like 30 minutes or something like this. So we're pretty quick. We're present when there's comments, concerns, and so on. Mm. But the reach isn't that big.
Okay. So let's imagine we're having a conversation in July of 2020 about where EVA has been in the last year. We do a little catch up. What would you be hoping that you have accomplished in that point in time?
That's a good question. Because as every startup, we're growing in an agile process, mm-hmm. and not really knowing where we're going, but at least we're knowing we're going somewhere. So that's a good thing. I will hope to be in at least within a year in at least, running in 6 cities.
Okay.
And, you know, fully running, not like in like open beta or anything like this, like running with, you know, commercials, like commercial operations, in at least 6 major cities.
Okay.
Cities like Montreal, like Quebec cities, like Calgary, like Glasgow, like Auckland, like Victoria. So this is what we're aiming for. Well, at least from my personal perspective, we have other goals. I would like as well, to add some different features in the app that we're still working on. But like these are more like some minor, additions. But yeah, I will say in at least 6 cities. That will be awesome.
Okay. All right. Is there anything else that we haven't touched on yet that you think is an important part of our conversation?
I will say is, and even if Canada is, you know, we're reputed to have like this great cooperative ecosystem, I will say, you know, to end this conversation, and this is, you know, constructive thought, it's not something like pessimistic, but we still need to work on the cooperative ecosystem to incentivize people to go toward this, this way of doing business, because this is a human approach to business. We're still lacking in Canada of financial resources for startup co-ops, especially platform co-ops.
Okay.
It's very hard for a platform co-op to develop a technology that is, totally powerful and, you know, as any other technologies, and to be a co-op. So I think we're missing some tools, but slowly we're building them, and this is great. This is my observations since 2 years now that have been really involved within the cooperative sector, is that there is this awareness that has to be raised among the leaders of the cooperative cooperatives in within the country, and that we still need to work, you know, that out. And we still have so many other challenges within the co-op ecosystem in Canada. The first one will be diversity, you know, to include more people of different backgrounds, people of different origins, and not all like white men like me. So, you know, we have different struggles, but I will say that one of the big will be to have like a stronger financial ecosystem for young co-ops to start. Because all the big co-ops, like the, you know, agricultural co-ops and so on, they're there, like they're existing since 100 years, you know. Some of them are almost 200 years. So, and back then it was way different than now. And if we want to launch, you know, Airbnb, which is an alternative to Airbnb, that was in Bologna, they went and they switched to Amsterdam in the Netherlands. They're struggling right now with the financing. Like, they have a hard time to get some funding, you know, to start.
Hmm. How do we create that awareness? How do we create that engagement, like, globally? Is especially, like, one of the challenges that has been coming up in conversation with co-ops, and I had this conversation with Vesta, who you know, is kind of talking, you guys talked a little bit about this at the CASC, I believe, about engaging young people in co-ops. And so how do we do that better? Like, what are kind of your thoughts around that?
I mean, there are out there some amazing good books, articles on how co-ops can be the solution to the fourth industrial revolution. Because the fourth industrial revolution will be the first one to create less jobs than the previous. And it will be a revolution, an industrial revolution, that if we don't, you know, the people, the masses, 99%, if we don't take control over it, the 1% and the, you know, the elite will even win more. The co-op is a solution, because right now, and we're seeing it, there's less and less secured jobs. You know, all jobs are like freelancers, self-employed, and so on, because employers don't want to pay, you know, all these social benefits and so on. You know, all the autonomous mechanisms that are coming with, you know, self-driving cars and so on. So co-ops are a way to be a solution that will put the people, like, you know, workers, in control of their labor, in control of their ecosystem. Mm. And co-ops, I mean, they work. They work way better than traditional startup. If you look to the stats regarding a co-op after 10 years and a regular startup after 10 years, the co-op has much more chances to survive than a traditional corporation. So I truly believe that with all the books, the articles, the online contents, I hope that people will get that it's a solution to have, like, to some so many markets. And what's cool about co-ops is that we've seen in the past a lot of them were created during economic crisis, because they're viable. The members of workers, they own their own business, and that's so powerful. They get to decide, when we get to decide what we do with our own labor, and this has, like, no price. It's,
right. The power of being your own boss is something.
Yeah.
There's something freeing about that.
And sharing resources, and, you know, the dynamic of, and even a government with a co-op is way different than a government with an Inc. There's so many benefits, but one thing to remember is it's also easy for a co-op to turn as almost as a like corporation without, you know, truly caring about their members. It would be like these big, big, big co-ops. So we still like need to keep all the management local as as much as possible, so that, you know, it remains true to itself.
As the fall election comes, as the fall federal election comes, do you think that the co-op conversation can be a small part of the federal election platform or conversation, or what are your thoughts on that? How, can we engage in that, or is that we still do we still have a ways to go of making it a really bigger issue?
I will say yes, because co-ops are, I mean, they're not either left or right. You know, co-ops are very powerful in Western Canada and Alberta as well. And, you know, conservatives are very strong there. So I will say that, I mean, we can bring the topic on, because there are so many subjects regarding, you know, all the oil industry that we're having in Canada, all the green industries that we need to have more in Canada, the automotive industry, which is facing some huge, you know, struggles since the last economic crisis in 2008. So I think that we can integrate the co-op dialogue within the upcoming federal election, especially regarding funding. Yeah. If we look to private companies and how much they get in grants and loans from the government, I'm thinking about Chrysler, Bombardier, you know, they just bought this random pipeline a couple of months ago. So the Trans Mountain, I think.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If we put like a fraction of all these, you know, traditional corporation-oriented funds and bring them to the social and solidarity economy ecosystem, that would be powerful. Cool. So we can have this dialogue, because right now, one of the problems of the co-ops, and, you know, money is very important, you know, even if we're a co-op or not, is to inject more money in the cooperative ecosystem, so that we can help promote co-ops that would encourage people to have such a business model.
Right, right. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on with us today on Each for All. So for people that are looking for you, how do we find you on the web? How do we connect with you? Things like that. If they're wanting to get involved with you, tell us about how to be in contact with you.
Yeah, well, it's pretty simple. We're on pretty much all social media, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, Reddit, Steemit, Medium, GitHub. The best way will be Telegram. We're pretty active on Telegram. As well, email. You can email us at the email address on the bottom of the website. The website is eva.coop, C-O-O-P. The email is contact@eva.coop, or simply call us in the office. I mean, we're pretty present, so we'll answer you very quickly. You can also, if you pass by Montreal, our office is downtown, so you can always meet us there and have some amazing Montreal bagels.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and we're also, if you're interested in starting a co-op, an EVA co-op to do ride sharing in British Columbia, which, whether in a big city or a smaller one, feel free to contact us. We'll be more than happy to meet with you and to discuss how we can make this happen.
Okay, that sounds great. So be in touch with Darshan. He will be glad to help you out wherever you are. Thanks again for coming
on,
Darshan. Really appreciate it. Have a great night, and thank you all on Each for All for listening, and we'll send this back to